That's the Jamaican jazz pianist Monty Alexander with Soulful Strut, featuring the Rhythm Masters, drummer, percussionist Sly Dunbar, and bassist Robert Shakespeare. The duo known popularly as Sly and Robbie, and they are a rhythm section by themselves. They've done a lot to promote reggae. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Friday, November the 15th. And a case we talked about yesterday when we were talking about Detroit, the case, of course, that we referred to yesterday was the shooting death of Renisha McBride. Prosecutors announced this morning that they have charged Theodore Wafer with second-degree murder and manslaughter in the death of Renisha McBride on November the 2nd in Dearborn Heights, an upper middle-class community, I should say. She was 19 years old and was attempting to get some help after running into a car. She was driving her vehicle and it collided with a parked car. She was trying to get some help, knocked on the door of Mr. Wafer, who blasted her in the face with a shotgun. So second-degree murder and manslaughter charges are pending against him as I speak. And House Republicans are trying to take a vote, get a vote passed, and hopefully we will know about this about just about the time that the show is ending today, whether they would succeed in it or not, and that is to pass a bill approving the promise that President Obama had made and wasn't able to keep, and that is to get insurance companies to hold off, not just to hold off, but to continue selling their policies, the policies that would have otherwise been declared null and void, and so many millions of people would have lost their coverage. So they're taking a vote. They have a bill sponsored by Representative Fred Upton of Michigan. Michigan is in the news a lot these days. That would extend the policies for another year, and not just for those who lost them, but for anyone who might want to buy them, which goes a step further than what the president had wanted to do. And, you know, in this particular instance, here again we see the president operating in his customary majestic fashion, the absolute monarchist, thinking that he can do this by executive order, which is what he decided that he will do. He would just issue an executive order and the insurance companies would adjust accordingly and they will do their thing. That's not how this is done. Whoever is advising the president clearly doesn't understand the law. And the president himself, who's supposed to be somewhat versed in constitutional law, looks like a recidivist. He just hasn't learned his lesson. You can't, you know, you have an industry that is regulated by the federal government. Any change in what the industry does has to come out not from the president's writing on a sheet of paper and signed by him, and then it becomes law via executive order. It ought to come out of Congress. And similarly with the whole bill, we talked about that just yesterday. This entire bill did not come out of Congress. And even the fix now, he insists, it doesn't have to come out of Congress either. So he's just compounding the problem. Just compounding the problem. I don't know what it is with this president that he just doesn't get it, or that his advisors just don't get it, or maybe he is in so deep with his political, what could I call it, his political godparents, that he feels an absolute, this is recklessness in the extreme. The bill that created Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, did not come out of committee, any committee. And so now is the fix. He's going with that, I'll sign an executive order and make it happen. It will happen, knowing full well that it will come under legal attack. There will be lawsuits galore. But I guess the feeling is, well, look, there's so much money in the till. We could afford lawyers, and we have a whole department just filled with them. And we could, we will do what we need to do first and then figure out the rest later if it should come to that. But that's what the House is going to do today. And there's every indication that it will pass. Certainly the Republicans are behind it. And the tenor of the time seems to suggest that there are Democrats also parting ways with the president on this Obamacare, because they have a congressional election facing them right around the corner. And the last thing they need is to go into a reelection campaign as an incumbent, having to fight the crimes of the president. All right. But that brings me to a discussion today about this zero-sum mentality that we see so pervasively throughout American culture and society and the policy-making structures of America, government, in other words. What is a zero-sum mindset? It's, you know, it's a phrase that came up some time ago. And essentially, the principle is somebody's gain is somebody's loss. And in order for you to basically gain something, it kind of helps to be comforted by the fact that you are a winner and consequently somebody else is a loser. You've won the prize, they've got nothing. That makes you feel better. And that is why, for example, in New York City and elsewhere, you have landlords who believe that to actually profit as a landlord, to make money as a landlord, is directly related to the level of misery your tenants must live with and in. Okay? If you provide heat in the winter, well, that takes X number of dollars out of your pocket, and you don't like it. Since you are a landlord, you like the idea of having tenants and that predictable amount of money coming into your pocket every month. So to maximize your profit, you have to minimize somebody else's comfort. It goes in policymaking too. It's a thing that is so pervasive. Winners and losers. That's how this country operates. In day-to-day life, you're a winner if you make X amount of dollars a year, and you drive a certain kind of car, and you live in a particular kind of neighborhood. And your gain becomes all the more important when it is compared with somebody else's loss or inability to achieve or lack of, you know, all of the bennies that suggest prosperity. And it is this dichotomy that continues this society. It's permeated all through, all classes, all levels, all cultures have this kind of attitude. My progress must come at the expense of your lack of progress. My gain comes at the expense of your loss. Politics is just zero-sum mindset to the nth degree, exponentially so. We win because we just killed the other party. We just threw them out. Total loss. We've talked about subjects here that illustrate the point, and Obamacare is a very good example. This zero-sum thing. Right now, as a matter of fact, the big sleeping catastrophe that this president has not yet raised, and nobody else has raised it, openly yet. I guess they're waiting for it to explode on its own. While the fight now is to get people back on track and to fix whatever has to be fixed so that people with policies don't lose them, there are millions and millions of people who already don't even qualify for them and will never qualify for them. You're talking about people in those states that have rejected Obamacare dollars. They said, we're not going with that program. That's not just one or two states. It's 25 states. 21 of them have said, absolutely not. We're not even thinking about it. We wouldn't even institute this program. And there are four that are saying, well, we don't know. We'll think about it. We're still thinking about it. But in these 25 states altogether, that's half of the nation. They're not yet on board with Obamacare, and they're not interested in expanding the Medicaid program. So if you happen to live in these 25 states, this excitement is going on, and it's half of the entire nation is not even in the discussion yet. Come January 1, what's going to happen to those folks? These are people who do not qualify for Medicaid because they make probably a dollar or two more than is allowed for the poverty means test. And even with subsidies, they can't afford to buy insurance. What are you going to tell these people? What are you telling them now? The interesting thing is that many of these folks come from states where they are heavily black populations and poor and very, very Christian. In the Bible Belt, these are Bible Belt states. I could go down the list alphabetically for you. Alabama. Well, Alaska isn't, but Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Idaho, Indiana, Kansas, Louisiana, Maine, Mississippi, Montana, Nebraska, North Carolina, Oklahoma, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Virginia, Wisconsin, and Wyoming. These states are saying, we don't want this program. We don't even want the money for the program. So where does that leave these folks? Where does it leave folks living in these states? That isn't even on the board. So the zero-sum thinking is, and this is where Obama becomes true to his word, that he's interested in the, quote, middle class, unquote. He's interested in the middle class. So that's who he's worrying about right now. These folks who have insurance policies that were canceled are going to be taken care of right away because Bill Clinton stepped up. You know, Massa said, hey, get these folks fixed. And he heard and has obeyed. even if he has to do it again in typical Clinton fashion of doing it very sneakily via executive order, which is easily, you could easily challenge that. But everybody's desperate to get these people on board. While half of the nation, there is no discussion about what happens to these people. In these states, because the Supreme Court, remember the same Supreme Court, people are running to the Supreme Court and talk about this, Obamacare is legal because the Supreme Court said it's legal. Well, the Supreme Court also said that states have the right to decide whether to take on the program or to reject it. They weren't counting on that. But 25 states so far have not adopted Obamacare. And they don't even want the Medicaid money. So how does that population living in all these 25 states, what happens to them? The zero-sum principle is the most important people are being taken care of right now. Their gain is the other folks' loss. Sorry, you lose. You have no, I mean, this is not your fault. People didn't say, well, this is what I want. The political apparatus says this is what you're going to get. Granted, the federal government said, we have money available to subsidize the program in your state. But the court has said, we leave it up to the governors to decide whether they want this money. And the governors have said, in these states that I just rattled off for you, they said, we don't want it. We don't want this program. And it doesn't even make news. But look at the hullabaloo already, and this is for people who have insurance. What's being said about the folks who have no insurance and won't qualify, even with subsidies, they won't be able to afford to buy it. Well, a lot of the states that I just rattled off to you have something very special about them, and that is they have large populations of African American and Latino people, and the churches are really quiet. One would think, you know, somebody coming out of Louisiana or Georgia or Florida, you have a lot of churches in Florida. I haven't heard any of the black elected officials in Congress talking about this half of the nation that isn't even yet on the map. And nobody has any idea of how this thing will work for half of the nation. And yet, come next year, penalties accrue. Because the absolute monarch has decided that he can do it. And so it is the law. It is the law. And they run tell you that it is the Supreme Court put its holy stamp on this thing. So not only is it the law, it's really the law. The highest court in the country says you got to pay. They forgot to read the fine print. The high court says they don't have to take it. They don't have to take your program. So the notion is that there is only so much, this is part of the zero-sum thinking. There's only so much of this stuff that is going around. We have only so much to share. And those who are worthy will get their fair share. Those who are not simply won't. and you'll have to find a way to survive. These same people make up a sizable proportion of the people who elected the Democratic president and the party in general, gave it a majority in the U.S. Senate. I haven't heard the discussion from the Democratic Party about these folks who are just going to be, what is going to happen? And it's not like about 100 people we're talking about. We're talking about half of the nation's states. So I'm waiting to see when this will become a national crisis, a mega crisis, a tsunami, a political tsunami. I'm waiting to see when that hits. And see who the faces are who are going to bat for the poor people who will have to do without, because in the world of winners and losers, they already have been consigned as losers. They're going to lose in the affordable insurance game. This is affordable insurance by federal definition. This is a mindset that is all throughout America. You're a winner or you're a loser. A lot of what this president has done, these crazy shortcuts that he has taken, these backdoor, back room, Chicago-style gutter snipe politics that he's been indulging in, all predicated on winning by any means. You win. And therefore, the Republican Party is on the other side of that, the flip side. It never feels good because they have, quote, lost, unquote. But the issue isn't winning or losing, is it? The issue is, how do we bring resources to the people of this prosperous nation so that we can be proud to say that they have reasonable access to the strategic resources? I talked to you some time ago about the six things I look for in any government. Dreams that it is. Food, shelter, employment, health care, education, and safety. In every respect, we have the zero-sum mindset occurring. Food. There are those who have, and there are those who just don't have it. 46 million people don't have it. Does it matter enough that this country should get really agitated about it? Heck no! They just made it possible for even more people to not have food. Let's reduce the food stamp program. Let's just cut a couple of millions out of it. And keep the resources where they serve the political advantage. Schools, education. Let's just shut down the schools. The public, just shut down public schools. And let's privatize it and make it a commodity for those who can afford it. If those who can't afford it will just have to cope with substandard education. Healthcare is not a right. It's a kind of a privilege. And there will be health care for those who can afford it by insurance. The government is so dedicated to this principle, it actually went into the insurance business. It just went. Obama just established a state-certified monopoly because the state selects who it's going to have within its system, its network. So therefore, the state has created a monopoly. And it's not about healthcare. Reforming healthcare would be reforming the formula that says if you are occupying this station in life, you're middle class, middle income, and up, you have access to this kind of healthcare. And if you don't have that kind of money, well, you know, we love you and everything, but, you know, we can't really take care of you the way you want us to take care of you. You are a liability to the state. You know, you're creating problems for us. So this is the mentality that we've been dealing with in public policy for a long, long time. You look at the entire city of Detroit, this president and his administration, and all members of Congress and all members of the U.S. Senate, they should be concerned that an entire city is about to go down the toilet. It looks almost like an apocalypse now. Someone just sent me some photographs yesterday, and I watched a program, Anthony Bourdain, who does a food program, travels around and so forth, and his last installment, probably symbolically, the final installment was Detroit. And he couldn't get over what he was seeing with his own eyes in the United States. But this does not constitute an alarming situation so that the whole nation should be concerned that an entire city is going down the toilet. In fact, they're looking forward to it. With this zero sum thing is that if it's going down the toilet, let's make it possible let's accelerate the problem. Let's accelerate it so that it's done quickly. We don't want the long and lingering death. Let's just get it over with, because clearly this city was meant to go down that way. And then good people, the right kind of people, will come in, and the city once again will rise like a phoenix from its ashes. The winners will get Detroit. The losers are still there. So this notion of winners and losers, zero-sum thinking, that the gains must be compared to the losses, you have to have that dynamic of gains and losses, winners and losers, when in fact reform is about everybody doing better. Everybody, especially those who have been cast aside and have been on the periphery. You open up the sluices a bit and you allow them to fully participate. They have families too. They have dreams and aspirations too. They want to do all the things that people say good citizens ought to do. But not with zero-sum thinking. You've got to have losers. Even if you manufacture them, they have to have them. Because without losers, what's the point of being a winner? You have to compare yourself to somebody in order to maintain that sense of superiority and righteousness. Look at me. I have achieved. Clearly, it's because I'm made of superior material. And I deserve what I have and more. And just because you are lazy and you're not that bright, and you're not really willing to work as hard as I have or as smart, this is the Obama administration's key word, smart. They are smart people with smart policies. You deserve to be a loser. And so you will have to wait until we decide that we can bring you in to the into the realm of conversation. Until then, just kind of make yourself as invisible as possible. A whole city is about to die, and it's invisible to this government. I don't understand that. And it's right across the lake from Chicago, where our president started his political life. He has no, there's no discussion of Detroit. There's no special session of Congress being called to discuss what we can do to save this historic city and to stop what clearly is a domino effect that it will have. Well, I'll take a break now and come back to your thoughts about the zero-sum mindset and how it affects us all right after these few words about great programming right here at PRN.FM. We'll come back just after this. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM, I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's time for your calls and comments at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I just want to read you one that came through leadstories@gmail.com, and it's Steve saying, if the 47 million people on food stamps were standing on soup lines all over the country, you can bet there would be a public outcry about what the hell is going on. But since we have digitized hunger and put the soup lines at the checkout counter in ShopRite, well, what the heck? Out of sight, out of mind. All is okay. Poverty is hidden. Case closed. Thanks for that. Bill from Georgia, you're on the air.
Hi, is this Miss Lee?
Yes, it is. It's Eutrice.
Hi. Yeah, this is Bill. So this is for you and for everyone who might be listening. There is just so much that is like stuck in my throat that I couldn't even begin. But I just wanted to kind of connect with you in a personal way and just say, it's just so difficult or so rare to just hear someone whose heart really gets it. And there's like just so much that obviously you just can't say, you know, because it's like really hard for everyone to kind of try and realize what's really going on. But I just wanted to give you all my heart and just say thank you so much. What a blessing you are.
Oh, boy. Thank you. Thank you for that. That's very encouraging to me. And it makes me feel good about doing this program, because it's about all of us meeting here and exchanging our thoughts and ideas and opinions. And I am always grateful because I get an education out of interacting with people. So I'm glad that the program has meaning to you. I really appreciate that.
It's golden. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Oh, boy. That's a lot, but I thank you for it. I have to get better at accepting compliments, you know. I have to do better at that. I'm not good at that at all. 888-874-4888. But this is true. You know, the fact is that this is why we have lawmakers and we have people who supposedly represent our interests, but increasingly they're not. They're there. This is a business. Politics is a business. And it's about money and power. and the ability to do things that they just want to do. They join a club. Congress is a club. I talked about the presence of millionaires in the Senate and in the House. They don't have the feeling of what it takes to get from Monday to Tuesday, which is where most people are that I know. People are struggling, trying to just keep their heads above water, and they entrust others with the responsibility of government. And we are suffering under this illusion that we actually have the power over these people we elect, that we control the throttle and brake of government, that, you know, we open up the throttle and tell them to go and they go, and then we apply the brake and tell them to stop and they stop. They're not listening to us. They have their own concerns. As I talked about Obamacare and this multi-million, almost $1 billion when it all is said and done, and just setting up this website alone, and no bid contracts. How does this happen? This is corruption right in your face. This president is doing these, the word was unprecedented when we talked with the professor who wrote this book about the unprecedented things that this administration has done. Flagrantly just setting aside all the things that ought to be observed. All the rules don't apply. And just yesterday did another one. Just said, well, look, you know, I could just sign a piece of paper and make it happen. From my desk, it has great power. Let's get this changed. And that's it. No, there is a Congress. That's their job. How do you pass a bill this enormous with such ramifications and you do it like a thief in the dead of night when people are getting ready to head home for the holidays? No committee has seen this bill before it becomes a law. The Senate has one version and the House has another version, and then you kind of give it the blessing, you sprinkle some, you know, mystery dust on it, and it becomes magically the law. It's this president is doing this, and the Black caucus is silent, the Latino caucus is silent, the Progressive caucus is silent, and the Republicans, I'm not a fan club of the Republicans, but they have some very valid arguments here. The Democrats are out of control. Congress is out of control. They're all out of control. These things could not happen in a democratic government. You just look and see what is happening before our very eyes. They're not even hiding this stuff anymore. This is in your face. You're nothing. Again, with zero sum, we're the losers. We are the losers. The 99% are the losers. The 1% are the winners. We have a country with 16% of people hungry, and yet the country is doling out billions and billions of dollars so that farmers should not produce food. What kind of thinking does that? That is and that's the ultimate result of zero-sum thinking. It's inhumane. It has no conscience. It has no morality. It has no sense of humanity attached to it. If I have to win, you've got to lose. Period. Isn't that a great way to live? And then the people, you look at all these black preachers, all these southern states where these people are going to be paying a huge price. I haven't heard Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton ask the question, well, what's going to happen to these folks? It shouldn't happen to anybody, but I'm talking about the fact that this particular constituency has repeatedly gone to the aid of the Democratic Party and salvaged it. For what reason, I don't know. But their leaders aren't speaking out. Mississippi, South Carolina, Texas, you know, you're talking Maryland, Illinois. When you say Illinois, you basically check in each of these states, the urban centers of these states really are the concentrations of poor people and working class and working poor. The District of Columbia is expanding, but then you have the problem. The District of Columbia is expanding, but guess what? They wouldn't tell us so far how many people actually registered in the District of Columbia, which is denied statehood. This president is, and this whole administration, this whole business of government has become so putrid. Eric from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hi, Etrice.
Hello.
I just wanted to make a quick comment on the zero-sum game that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I was saying before, is that that's the example of what's happened in this society, where I think a lot of people are on board as long as it doesn't hurt them. So people have to change their mindset, you know, from one of hurting other people in order to gain for their personal gain. And people have to start looking around at how, you know, this country is affecting other people and how people are affecting each other generally.
But, you know? It does hurt them. This is a thing. Philosophically, they convince themselves that it doesn't hurt them, that they gain an advantage. But really, you know, you gain an advantage, but, you know, you live in isolation. You have to live in a community that this is how, you know, this is what happened in the case we talked about just yesterday about Rashida in Dearborn, Michigan. She knocks on a door, and it's not even responded to in a humane way. It is responded to Renisha McBride. She knocks on the door looking for help. The humanitarian response was a shotgun blast to her face. Now, you know what I mean? This is what happens.
All around the world, we're not seen as human beings. You know, even in Africa, we're not seen as human beings. So this is why, you know, bombs can be dropped on you know, people of color. This is why so much atrocity happens predominantly in areas where there's a lot of black people and or people of color, Latinos, Arabs.
There's physical atrocity. There's psychological atrocity.
Yeah.
There's moral atrocity. The fact is, it doesn't benefit anybody to think this way.
It doesn't benefit anybody, exactly.
Not at all.
I think because of all of the abuse, people begin to, for example, one of the songs that Tupac Shakur, you know, in one of his verses, he said, "Wouldn't you if we could trade places?" You know, and you analyze that, and you know, you realize. I mean that speaks of so much trauma. You know, it speaks of so much trauma, and the idea that you would readily give up yourself if, you know, and what you have to be in other people's shoes, you know, because your experience has been so bad. But I'd also like to add a little bit, you know, about what you said, you know, who has control of the levers. And I slightly disagree, because I say that people have control ultimately. And, you know, this has been throughout history, eventually people will lose enough that they will try to regain control. And when that happens, it comes through violence. It comes through all kinds of things. But, you know, eventually they manage to do something that alters what you know, the reality on the ground. You know, it's just too bad, in my opinion, that people only choose to regain their control of the situation when they've lost just about everything. So it's very important for people to realize that, no, they, you know, they need to spend $6 billion to make, to convince you. That means that you're very important. It means that you actually do have a lot of control. That's why they're so scared about the polls and what, you know, what people are saying and how people are feeling. Look what happened to Syria. People said, no, we don't want another war right now. We don't want it. Now, can it be sustained? Maybe not. But they had to go and, you know, figure out how to get what they want because the people said no. So people actually have way more control than they think they do. And if people would only exercise, you know, that control and stop being easily convinced by things that they know they don't see, you know, then maybe things could change.
Well, I appreciate your thought. I appreciate it very much. Thank you for contributing.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. This is from Livia. She writes on leadstories@gmail.com. Hi, Therese, as always, this is a great show. It is really plain to see this government has no interest in the people. The attitude is, as long as I have mine, to hell with you. We consistently hear about how great this place is and how we are number one. Yeah, right, my name is Waldo. We really need to do something that will give these boneheads a serious wake-up call. Voting is one way if you vote for someone other than the Democratic or Republican Party. I'm looking for other ways, but I haven't come up with anything yet. I don't know what to say. I'm very disappointed, and I'm about ready to give up. Oh, don't give up at all. Never give up. They're counting on it. Just continue just to annoy them, if only to annoy them, just continue to live. Thanks, Livia, for that. DX from LA, you're on the air.
Hello, you, Therese. How are you doing this beautiful?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing fine. First, I wanted to say that I'm glad that new people are tuning into your show. You have a very unique show. You know we all love you, and
it's a love fest. It's love. I love everybody.
That caller that called, I mean, it really touched me because, you know, what he said was true. You know, you really are. You're conducting a show here where we get to put our input, and also you have the most fascinating topics, and we learn so much. So I appreciate that as well.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, what I wanted to say, you know, this is just another example, this whole healthcare thing of, like, crony capitalism. I just wanted to add something in that maybe you didn't know about and some of the listeners didn't know about is that Michelle Obama's Princeton classmate, a woman by the name of Toni Townes Whitley, is one of the executives.
Right, one of the ones that run the big contract.
Right. She's a senior vice president at CGI Federal, and they earned a no-bid contract, and the website costed around $678 million to build.
That's correct. Absolutely so.
Correctly. And, you know, this is just the same old mess. And I just wonder when people are going to reject this total system. Because, you know, I advocate peaceful nonviolent revolution and just total divestment from their whole program from top to bottom. Don't participate in their phony elections or anything. Just let them, you know, carry on as they wish until it all crashes and just have our own little local things going on. So that's what I wanted to contribute, and maybe you can comment on that as well.
No, I think your point is well taken, and you're right. I didn't name the person, but you did, and you're correct. And that was the amount reported about this one, and that's only one of the contracts, not the contract. That's only one of them, in excess of $680 million.
Yeah.
No bid.
Now that is ridiculous. The amount is ridiculous. I mean, who pays $700 million to construct a website? No matter how many people are going to be logging on, how many servers you need. I kind of work in the IT field myself, and I know that can be done at one-tenth of that price, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well,
it's just ridiculous. People need to just reject this.
It's called corruption. In your face, right. Corruption. That's what that
absolutely
is.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it comes with a so-called liberal label. Thanks
right.
for calling. Thank you for your input. Well, we've come to the end of the program today, and I wanted to bring this to your attention because, you know, we sometimes have to reposition what our experience is to understand it better. And if you look at it, it's not just policy making, but policy making that has a predetermined aim and objective and reinforced psychologically with this notion, oh, I'm in the group of the haves, and as opposed to I'm the group of the have-nots. The haves have power, the have-nots don't. You know, this kind of thing. We have all kinds of ways in which we are twisted and imposed upon to think a particular way. Why? Because our thinking informs our actions. And if they can psychologically defeat you, even before you contemplate action, that's half of the objective met. You are disabled, 50% already, if you are thinking that you are with a group that is powerless. And that was the point that Eric was making. We have power. We don't understand that we have power. And we don't understand how to flex our muscle so that we make it plain what it is we want. I don't think in reading, you know, I do like to read. I have not come across an example in which people, the regular people, wanted something inhumane. They always were looking for a recognition of their humanity. They've never been interested in penalizing anybody, brutalizing anybody. They want a fair society. They want to raise their children. They want to have a decent job, to provide for their families and so forth. But we have this lopsided notion and all these psychological reinforcements at work to convince us that we shouldn't proceed. I want to thank you for calling in today. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Richard Martin with Wake Up Call. You want to stay tuned for that. And have yourselves a decent weekend. Take some time and relax because you have to outlive these monsters. See you on Monday. Bye-bye.